This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go?
Yeah, well, you're gonna stay because you're property of our tourist Carnishibus, and he always views it as the no trade deadline, and it's coming up on Friday. Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Well, sure, I suck, so you don't have to. I can't even get the trade deadline right, but you know who can? Who will? He's Casey Johnson. He is my next guest. He is coming on The Score, and our guest hotline is presented by Circa Sports Illinois. He writes reports. He is America's basketball teenager, forever young, for NBC Sports Chicago. Casey, how you doing?
What's up, Steve? How you doing?
I am doing great, and you've already made plans to be able to like go to dinner, get a manicure, get a pedicure, get a massage, because nothing happens with the Bulls on our tourist Carnishibus's no trade deadline, right?
I think they do something, but who? I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, that's what the deadline's for. Usually creates action. I don't know. Well, a lot of rumors in the air. Obviously, the Zach situation is out there. Maybe this year will be different. We'll have to wait and see.
Where are they at this point? How does the trade deadline impact what seems to be their emphasis to get into any kind of play beyond the 82 games, even another play-in game, to just get there as opposed to, you know, realizing this just doesn't work if you're thinking championships? Everybody in the East got better, and the Bulls have done nothing. So where are they now? Where do you view them? Through what prism do you view this roster and this franchise in terms of the East?
Well, it all changed when what happened with Zach happened in November, because, you know, that added a different layer to it. So, you know, the Zach situation is public and has been out there for so long that I've said it's a matter of when, not if. I mean, this is a relationship that is headed for a divorce, and that's the way it's, you know, framed on the beat and has felt like since early November. So that's why it's different this year. But as far as the East, I mean, you know, it's playing right into Arturis's plan. I mean, the East is filled with parity. I mean, the Bulls, as bad as they've been, are firmly in the play-in picture. They're not too far off the number six seed, which is an automatic playoff berth. You know, they'd obviously have to win some games. I mean, there's a little bit of a gap there, but it's not untenable, even though they had that 5-14 start. So that's what we heard is in the offseason was kind of the plan. Add some floor-raising veterans in Javon Carter and Torrey Craig. Tweak the offensive philosophy to maximize the big three. And hope for parity in the East, which is what has happened. Other than, you know, the top teams are, you know, top-heavy. So it's kind of playing out how they wanted it to, other than that 5-14 start. But then, like I said, the Zach situation has added a different layer, and whether it's by next Thursday or this offseason, I do expect that to be elsewhere at some point.
Well, you wrote about that last summer. You said there were inquiries, there was discussion. The Bills were not hanging up on people, as they talked about Zach. You had, it's not a, quite a year ago, 8 months ago or whatever, this was how you spent your summer vacation, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, the Bulls have downplayed this, but I was told that, you know, they initiated some of those conversations. So I know that's what at least Zach's perception is, which is one of the reasons why it led to Zach doing, Zach and his representative doing what they did in November. There's been questions about Zach's role as kind of the number one option within this organization almost since the moment he signed the max contract. I mean, that was a celebratory occasion. He was on the ascent there. I mean, he was becoming more of a two-way player. His decision-making had improved. He was coming off of a recent gold medal appearance on Team USA. Everything was aligning well. And then, you know, it's kind of gone downhill a little bit since then. And, so it's just, like I said, it's had this feel of a relationship that needs to break up, and it's just a matter of when, not if.
Casey Johnson is my guest. He covers the Bulls for NBC Sports Chicago. The Bulls will play tonight. They'll play the Kings tonight. You can hear them on this radio station, 6:45, Chuck's pregame show. Do you expect the Bulls, in whatever they're, however motivated they are to trade Zach to get rid of him? I have two parts to this question. The first is, do you expect them to make sure they make public anything that smacks of progress to make it, to send out a press release or just make sure the news gets out before the trade deadline that Zach has made great progress and we expect him back in a week? And essentially the subtext is we expect him to be trade bait. Do you expect that to happen? Could that happen?
You mean in terms of the health situation?
Yes.
No, they've actually already pushed his health situation past the trade deadline with yesterday's update. Billy Donovan told us he's not even going to be reevaluated for the week, which is next Friday. That's past the deadline. And I asked Billy flat out, is this going to be a season-long issue? And he said he didn't want to speculate. But look, this is a troublesome injury because it's in that metatarsal area, which is very delicate. And, you know, it's clear that Zach is, you know, worried about it because, you know, it cost him 17 games earlier. He came back from that. Obviously, had the very public rolled ankle, sprained ankle. You could see him step on the Toronto player's foot. And that's healed, but now the foot discomfort has returned. So this is a legitimate injury. I know people want to tie to the trade deadline and all they're holding out past the deadline. I think that's an added benefit to the situation, if you want to phrase it that way, but this is a legitimate injury, and I think this is going to be, you know, if he's here past next Thursday, I think this is going to be how much is he willing to push through it kind of situation. And I'm not putting this on Zach because, like, he's played through, look, man, he played through, you know, knee injury that required a scope in a contract year to help the Bulls make the 2022 playoffs. So it's not like he doesn't have pain tolerance or pain threshold. But my point is, like, if he's here past the deadline, I expect this to be, you know, like, what's, you know, how much discomfort does he have? Is he willing to push through it for a lost season? That kind of stuff. So this is a legitimate injury, and it's complicating the situation.
Yeah, I didn't think it wasn't legitimate. I didn't mean to to say that. And I also should have prefaced it by saying, despite what Billy said, it would be make even more news. It would be even more magical and miraculous and show strength of if they were to what they said, that we'll look at him another week. Oh, we looked at him on Wednesday, and he's made great progress. I just somehow expected that to trick up some kind of trade value for him.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. Here's my feeling about that. It's like the league knows who Zach is. They know his injury history. If you are trading for a player of that level with that contract, you're doing your own medical, you know, you're looking for records and all that stuff before you make that plunge, you know. So, I mean, look, it's well documented. He tore an ACL. He came back from that and was at 100%, you know, had the scope in the summer of 2022, looked like he came back from that pretty well. This is a new situation. I mean, this is the first time we've heard of this foot situation with Zach. But the fact, you know, when he talked to us on December 7th and talked about his concerns because it's in that metatarsal area, I mean, that can be a significant injury for a basketball player. So, But yeah, like I said, the league, if you're making that commitment to Zach LaVine, you're doing your own due diligence on that, or you're requesting to see medical records, or obviously for a trade to even happen, the player has to pass the physicals. So all that, you know, to me is a little bit secondary. I mean, it's whether or not you just want to add the contract and the player, because, you know, that's a significant commitment.
So when you look at where they are, if Zach becomes untradeable because he's injured, and now suddenly you've got Patrick Williams down, you've got, and you're dealing with such injuries and such a strapped bench and minutes being doled out, and you are desperately trying to get to hang on to the 10th spot, which I just, for franchise that has six titles, it seems like there's, what's wrong with this picture? I mean, there's some, one of these things is not like the other one. Why are you trying to do that? And they have publicly said that, or indicated that Alex Caruso, who might be their most tradable asset, is untradeable. We're not trading him. We love him. I'm not sure I understand what team they're going to end up with or why. And that's why, going into the trade deadline, do you expect anything? How do they get better? How do they, even in a parity strong East, how do they get better? How do they even compete in that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Alex is untouchable. I mean, if there's an offer that completely blows him away, I mean, they're going to consider it. I know they don't want to trade him, and he's on one of the best value contracts in the league. Yeah. So there's that. I mean, there's a two-pronged answer to that. I mean, it's like, whether or not they do something by Thursday, I mean, you've got to have a handle on DeMar's situation, because he can head to unrestricted free agency. So, you know, they're juggling a lot of balls for next Thursday. Their priority is to trade Zach and have that kind of be the main move. But if you can't find a taker for Zach, maybe you do move to a plan B that you don't want to do. And, you know, I always say, like, everyone's like, oh, it's Saturday. Well, there's a lot of time between now and next Thursday, a lot of time. So they're juggling both those situations. And then, you know, let's say they have a pretty non-eventful trade deadline again, and everyone's like, oh, they did it again. How do they get better? Well, you know, this summer, you're going to have a definitive answer on Lonzo Ball and whether or not he's going to be able to come back. And if he's not, obviously you can apply for that that injury provision, which takes his $20 million. Not only, you know, he still gets the money because it's a guaranteed contract, but it's paid by insurance, and it comes off your books for both tax and cap purposes. But to your point, it's like, you can't have Zach, DeMar, and Patrick. I mean, DeMar and Patrick are both up for extensions this summer, you know, or headed to unrestricted and restricted free agency, I should say. So you can't have all three of those guys in your team next year and not be a tax team. And we all know the Bulls' stance on the tax, as they like to avoid it. So, you know, I mean, they've got a lot of decisions to make, and I'm just as curious as everyone how they play it. But they are in an untenable position right now, because they're kind of like pretty average team with, now you've got some contract concerns moving forward. Again, their main goal and priority would be to trade Zach and then kind of figure out what the next moves are. But it takes a second team to do that, sometimes a third team. So we'll see what happens between now and Thursday.
This feels so much like a Groundhog's Day. It just feels like we're doing what we did last year. We want to get into, if there's a threat of playoff money, we want to get that. We're not making a commitment to tearing it down or doing anything else. We want that. We want to give ourselves a shot. And, hey, look, we won a game. Of course, in the second game, nobody who was getting paid a lot of money could hit a shot in the last 8 minutes. And this kind of feels like that same kind of struggle. So I guess my question is, what season are they playing? What are they playing for? What is Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley and Michael Reinsdorf, what do they really care about?
Well, I mean, Arturis has said that publicly. He cares about getting the playoffs and being relevant. And, you know, they've stated publicly that they thought, like I just said, that, you know, the additions of Javon Carter and Torrey Craig. Here's how, and people, like, I get ripped a lot when I present what, like, management's view is. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just telling you, this is what they, this, my job is to know what their plan is. And this is their thinking.
Yes.
Their thinking was this: add Javon Carter, add Torrey Craig, have Coby White and Patrick Williams take a huge step forward and tweak the offensive philosophy for DeMar, Zach, and Vooch to have more of an impact collectively on winning. Okay? That was the plan. All right, a lot of all those things, like one in a third of those things have happened. Coby White has taken a huge step forward, and all credit goes to him. I would say Torrey Craig has played pretty well, but he's obviously been hurt. He might be back tonight. If not tonight, he'll come back Tuesday. And I think there have been times where the offense has looked a little bit better, but it's still the 22nd, 23rd, I haven't looked today, ranked offense. Last year was 24th. So, yeah, it's a mess. that's why they're in ninth place in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, they don't have a lot of great options moving forward. I think a Zach trade would certainly give you some wiggle room. And I know it's pretty well documented that that's what they're trying to do. So we'll see if they get that done by Thursday.
On another subject, you covered Tony Snell when he came into the league, when the Bulls drafted him. Had him for three seasons, and the recent story is really sad, and it appears he needed to be signed by an NBA team by last Friday for his to get credit for the 10th year in the NBA, and what that would allow is for he and his family to get premium health coverage, which is medical coverage and drug and prescription and special help. And he was diagnosed late in life as late in his life so far at 31 as on the autistic spectrum, and his sons 2 and 5 are diagnosed on the autistic spectrum, and that requires extra help. And he was not signed, to my knowledge, unless you know something different. And this seems like such a, it's a sad story. It's such a shortfall of what Charles Barkley described as, look, if we're a family, help this guy out. And nobody signed him. What do you make of this situation?
I got to be honest, because I saw the headline and I'm loosely aware of the facts that you just detailed, but I do know that there was one stipulation as to why it was difficult to sign him, and I don't know what that is. So I don't want to speak too strongly or authoritatively on it. I usually am pretty well versed in all things NBA, but I've been pretty busy with some Bulls stuff lately, so I just have seen that headline. I can just say this, like, covering him, I mean, he was very, very quiet, very polite, but I didn't get very close to him, not in a bad way, just like he was so quiet, he was kind of a role player. I've said hello to him a couple times over the years when he played for other teams, but yeah, I mean, obviously you'd like to see, you know, people getting taken care of and have the best things work out for them and their family. I don't know exactly why. I can't speak for the teams and why they didn't sign him, because I don't know the reasoning behind that. But sounds like it was a really well done story by Jake Fisher from, I believe, Bleacher Report. Maybe he's with Yahoo.
Yahoo. No,
he's with
Yahoo. Yahoo. Yeah. And it was a lot of speculation.
I have not read the story, though, so I don't want to comment on it because I've not read the story.
A lot of speculation that the trade deadline interfered with it, in that teams with, like, the Bulls have an open spot on the roster. And other teams do too. So sign him. But there was speculation that you're going to be dealing with 2-for-1 trades, 3-for-2 trades. You want the open spot in case you want to make that kind of deal. And had, you know, it would have been easier for a team to do this a week from yesterday after the trade deadline. And the cynic in me, you might surprise, I can be cynical, Casey, that the cynic in me says, well, why wouldn't the Bulls sign him? The guy never does anything at the trade deadline anyways, might as well use the open roster spot for something good and maybe get some good publicity for your team, because right now it's a whole lot of crap. So I don't know.
There are also tax considerations, because the Bulls are very, I haven't looked at it recently, but the Bulls are very close to luxury tax. So that roster spot open might, you know, they're not going to sign Tony Snell for a feel good story and push themselves into luxury tax. I guarantee you that. And maybe it would work under the minimum deal under the tax. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's unfortunate for his family, and obviously I hope things work out for him and his family.
Okay, so since you had some experience in and around all of the many organizations around here, last question, Casey: Arturas Karnišovas, is that Lithuanian for Bob Pulford?
I just love how you now lean into Saturday Suckage. You like broadcast it, you name your show that. I just
yeah, well, I just thought I'd bring that up. You don't have to answer that. I just wanted to bring that up, and you
notice I artfully dodged it by switching it to the subject. I was around Pulley for a couple of years, man. That was early in my career. That was good stuff, man.
Yeah, he's covered the Bears, he's covered the Bulls, he's covered the Blackhawks. If you got a beat, he'll cover it. But mostly, he's a Hall of Fame reporter. You should be in the Hall of Fame for all the homage you pay to Sam Smith, dude. How long you been doing this?
Long time, man.
Yeah. You know Michael Jordan, dude. That should be a reason.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I got a lot of career left. I got two kids in high school, so I got a lot of college tuitions in my future. That's all I'm focused on right now.
All right. Smile at the camera, Casey. America's teenager. Thanks for your time, Casey.
Thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure.
As Casey Johnson, NBC Sports Chicago, former, we were both at the Tribune. He's terrific. He's a wonderful, wonderful beat guy. He's a great read. Observations after a game, whatever he's writing, follow him on Twitter. He's terrific. Oh, I forgot to ask him this question, but I will. Oh, it's 12:21, numerical synchronicity. This is usually when I see this on the, this is when I text my otter and tell her I love her. Numerical synchronicity.
Hustle.
12:21. Did you go to college, Robbie?
Me? Yeah, I went to college. Grand Valley State University.
Grand Valley State. I'm going to ask you to think about this. Is there, because we're going to do the cultural zeitgeist next, is there a college teacher, professor, or a just somebody who's not a student, a campus figure, not a student, that you think should be the subject of an entire semester of coursework, studying a specific person or the specter of a specific person? You think about that. Because I did this week after a news story came out, and I will share that with you in the cultural zeitgeist. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe owned the Chiefs.
Owns.
Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Welcome in, welcome back. Cultural Zeitgeist. This detour here from yet another 630 texter as we were talking about the wives. How long are we going to listen to that? There's a yet another 630 texter. Steve, while other wives might not enjoy Saturday Suckage, my wife prefers listening to you as opposed to other WSCR talent. We winter in Gainesville, Florida. So I think, Robbie, our only answer is to package this as the Real Housewives of 630. That's what we need to do. That's such thank you for all that response. So anyways, I asked you this question. And you can get, if not a degree, you can help your GPA by studying Deion Sanders at Colorado University. There's a school on the Boulder campus, the College of Media, Communication, and Information, CMCI. They're offering a 400-level class named after Deion Sanders, the football coach. Perhaps you've heard of him. Primetime Public Performance and Leadership. That's the title of the 400-level class. I kid you not. Primetime Public Performance and Leadership. Now, the course is... The course description is all about, well, studying students and professional athletes and NIL issue. And really? It just happens to have, and you're discussing branding with a guy who has branded the university with such fame as we saw.
That's a good one now. I got to admit, now that's a good one.
Imagine studying your football coach and getting to raise your GPA. Studying football players, you get to raise your GPA. What would that syllabus look like, right? Probably a lot of videos, a lot of volume control like you just had here, Robbie, and sunglasses. Don't you have to wear those sunglasses, right? And the white sweatshirt? Robbie, where'd you go to college?
I went to Grand Valley State University, so right by Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay, so is there a campus figure, not a student, but a campus figure? A professor, a teacher, an instructor, a dean, a provost, even if you don't know what a provost is, somebody whose life, career, who would be worth studying. I mean, imagine that. Okay. Here you are. You're on this campus. Here are all these people. And here's a semester of coursework dedicated to?
Louis the Laker, the mascot.
You're going to study a mascot.
There's no one else on our campus that is worthy of... having a class about that.
Not alumni, not current.
Well, hopefully future
professors.
Me. But that's it. Yeah.
Future me.
Yeah, future Robbie. Hopefully the show takes off, but it's sucking so far.
Well, that was the idea. you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. I went to USC, Southern California. When I was there, the theater department named John Houseman the department chair emeritus. You know who John Houseman is?
Not a clue.
He portrayed one of the greatest characters on film I have ever seen, for me, so personal. He portrayed Professor Kingsfield in The Paper Chase. It was a good movie, but it was a great performance, a great character, outstanding classroom scenes. John Houseman, this patrician, unmoved, British-like guy, fat as hell. And he was standing up there, and you hear him opening. And you come in here with a skull full of mush, and should you survive, you go out thinking like a lawyer. Professor Kingsfield taught contracts, thought to be the toughest, most the crucible of law students. For law students. So here's the scene. Here's one of the greatest scenes ever. He's outlining what kind of contracts will be covered in this course. And he pointed out he'll use the Socratic method. Question and answer. I'll ask, you'll give me an answer, I'll give you a new question. You'll give me an answer, I'll give you yet another question. And he calls on students, in this case, Mr. Hot, Timothy Bottoms. Timothy Bottoms is the law student who would fool around with Kingsfield's daughter, Lindsay Wagner, hello, bionic woman. That's who she would become. So Timothy Bottoms, smart lawyer. Anyways, this is one of the best scenes in the movie in the classroom.
Marriage contracts, traditional contracts, marriage contracts, historical contracts, French contracts, African tribal contracts, religious contracts, no. Mr. Hart, can you relate our next case to the summary we've been building?
Thank you. I prefer to pass.
What did you say?
Well, I have nothing relevant to say concerning the case. However, when I have something relevant to say, I shall raise my hand.
Mr. Hart, would you step down here?
Excuse me. Mr. Hart, here is a dime. Call your mother. Tell her there's serious doubt about your becoming a lawyer.
So, and with that, Kingsfield turns away from Hart, and Mr. Hart begins to walk up the stairs, exiting this amphitheater of a classroom, and then he suddenly stops.
You are a son of a bitch, Kingsfield.
Mr. Hart, that is the most intelligent thing you've said today. Let me take your seat.
It was great. It was wonderful. So, during my second year at USC, I'm heading to a morning class, and there, striding across the quad, is this porcine and unmistakable figure. Three-piece suit, shoes shined. Professor Kingsfield is walking across the quad. And you'd swear it was the opening shot from a movie or a TV show or whatever it is. That's the way he carried himself. I'd study him. I'd say, because he was part of the campus figure. I knew he goes back to the Mercury Theater Players with Orson Welles. You ever heard of them, Robbie?
Yes.
Tell me about them. What are they famous for?
Never mind.
Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater Players did War of the Worlds. And they played, it was a radio play in the late 30s with the backdrop of World War II going on in Europe, the war in Europe. And people in half of America was legitimately thought we were under attack.
It's funny you say this because I actually learned this at Grand Valley State. So that's how much I forgot and did not take advantage of my education.
Uh-huh. So John Houseman was part of those players, and he had a career producing plays, producing movies, writing movies, rewriting movies. He facilitated Citizen Kane, one of the greatest movies of all time, John Houseman did. And like I said, he was a fixture on Broadway. Paper Chase revived his acting career. Won an Oscar, won a Golden Globe. It was so much to recite. He also did Silver Spoons. Can you imagine? He's Professor Kingsfield, and then he's opposite Ricky Schroeder, John Houseman. So I wanted to see the extent of all this. And in the studying of what that I would have done for this character, if I had studied him on campus, and it would have been wonderful, because he's there. He's live. He's that. I have no idea if Deion Sanders is going to go into the University of Colorado classroom where this or Colorado University classroom where this is taught, but he sure should be the first guest speaker. And I would assume John Houseman would have been the guest speaker if I got to study him. I was 0 weeks old when I found out that this obese, patrician-looking, British-sounding Professor Kingsfield was Romanian. There are people out there my age who saw this movie, who saw The Paper Chase. Yes. You're learning this for the first time, too. John Houseman was named Jacques Houseman. He was Romanian. Now, that's acting. But he was spectacular. I have no idea what he was. I was afraid of him. Walking across the quad, you would think, now I would have walked up and said, I loved you. And I wanted to see just, was being Kingsfield acting, or was that just who he was? And that's the way, I don't know. I was stunned by that because when you're Jewish and you're in college, you're expected to go to law school or medical school, one of those things. And then Paper Chase came out and you go, oh, So that's what it's like. It's suicidal. I don't think so. I'm going to pass on that. And you have this guy as one of your instructors. This is the crucible. Anyways, John Houseman. And he was famous for a commercial. Smith Bond. They make money the old-fashioned way. They earn it. He was great. I'd study him. All right, you know, we'll take a break now. The cultural zeitgeist. We have a new guitar riff to enter into our list of greatest guitar riffs ever. And there's a story about... There's a story that brought back memories for me about one of the best pieces of literature I ever consumed at a place they're about to blow up. I'll share that with you. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckers. The cultural zeitgeist rolls on because that's what cultural zeitgeists do. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I tried to take the high road, but I don't know the address.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
We'll continue with the Saturday Zeitgeist here. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, but I did not want to miss an opportunity to read this text. 312-644-6767 is the number to get to our text zone and on the phone. In response to the many wives who want nothing to do with, how long are we going to listen to that Saturday Suckage? Here comes the 708. I am a female listener to Saturday Suckage. When my husband walks into the room and hears the show's opening of various people saying that they suck, he sighs and walks out of the room. He doesn't get it. Too bad. Bang, 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 bang. Please continue sucking. Bang, 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 bang. Well, I do it as a public service. I do it because I'm a pleaser, not a teaser. I'm doing it. I'm here for you, 708 female listener. 260 texter, my father, a Harvard law grad, told me that students regularly hid under their desks rather than face the wrath of the real-life Professor Kingsfields. 224, I was in law school when that movie came out. Have you watched John Houseman and the TV version of The Paper Chase? No, I did not. But in talking about campus figures you'd study, got nothing on primetime, 312 texture, got nothing on primetime, but recall walking across the quad to class at Chicago to see Milton Friedman and Saul Bellow in a quite lively conversation. See, there are some all-timers. There are some all-timers. So I started this several weeks ago, and it angered people, and so we thought, that's motivation enough to continue this. So now we're up to our 11th greatest riff in rock history. And it's going to start with motorcycles revving because that's where greatness lives. Easy Rider.
Get your motor running.
That's it. It's Easy Rider. John Cain, Steppenwolf. Born to be Wild.
You know, this is the first concert I ever went to. I was like 7.
Wait, Steppenwolf was still playing when you were 7?
They were doing like some like summer tour, but I was 7, so that had to have been 2002.
There was a big fight over who could really be Steppenwolf. It shouldn't have been anything without John Kay. I once interviewed him in his garage in the San Fernando Valley, and he's doing the rock t-shirt thing and sitting, and we're talking, and Born to be Wild, and all I remember is the rock t-shirt, and there's the Born to be Wild guy. A Magic Carpet Ride, which is a great Steppenwolf song. So you saw them. Your parents brought you to the drug-addled Steppenwolf concert?
All I remember from that concert was just being surrounded by weed smoke and cigarettes. And I remember thinking, like, at the time, this sucked. But now I think my dad's the coolest person ever for doing that.
There you go. That's right. Getting ready for real life. So did you get a contact high?
I think that's why.
Getting a contact high?
I think that's why I'm who I am today. Yes.
Look at that. 815 texter right on top of it. This morning I was listening to a rock station out west. They played Smoke on the Water followed by running down a dream and maybe think of your list. Yep. That's it. Maybe think of your show. That's it. Smoke on the Water is number one. Running Down a Dream is number two. And there is the Rolling Stone Satisfaction. And so that's number 11. We'll be back next week with number 12 if nobody important listened. Robbie, do you know what the Tropicana Casino is?
Not at all.
It's legendary. It's in Las Vegas. Let's start there. Okay? It's at the corner of Tropicana Avenue and the Strip, Las Vegas Boulevard. Trop and the Strip. And that's where it is, south end of the Strip. It's across the street from the MGM Grand, which used to be the Tropicana's golf course, which I played, lo, these many lifetimes ago. To give you an idea of what the Trop is, it could have been the model for Casino. Did you see that movie?
Sadly, no. It's on my list, though. I know.
Why is it our producer, like Trash Panda, was the same way? He'd never seen Goodfellas.
That's crazy. That's one of my. That's a top.
Don't tell me it's crazy, and you haven't seen Casino. Don't tell me that's crazy.
That's true, I guess.
Well, the Stardust was mostly the model for it, but the Trop could have been, because you're talking about a casino where it opens, and 3 weeks later, New York City mob boss. It opens in Las Vegas. New York City mob boss Frank Costello gets shot in the head, but he survives this. Police find in one of his coat pockets the day's take from the Tropicana, the skim from the Tropicana. This is back when the mob ran things. The best government in Vegas, the best government Vegas ever had. So it was all mobbed up, and I love all things mob. The Trop debuted the Folies Bergère in all of their much nakedness, brought that to Vegas. The Trop gave Siegfried and Roy their start. The Trop invented, brought out, gave you swim-up blackjack. It's exactly what you think. You're in the pool, swim up, they'll do you hands. Swim-up blackjack. And Evel Knievel made a record-breaking motorcycle jump outside the hotel, soaring 231 feet over a row of limousines. It was known for its Tiffany ceiling. I mean, it's known as the Tiffany of the Strip because of that stained glass ceiling. It was spectacular. I lived in L.A. We drive up there. We'd stay at the Trop regularly. We enjoyed all manner of their buffets. Really? You're going to give me all this lox and cream cheese and bagels to eat? All I want? Yes, sir, we are. That will be the site of the new Oakland A's ballpark, soon to be the Las Vegas A's. They are going to wreck the Tropicana. They're going to blow it up. They're going to drop it down. They're going to raise it, and everybody will watch on TV, and there'll be this massive dust storm. The Tropicana will close April 2nd. They're going to fully demolish it later on, and the A's ballpark will begin construction next year, and they're hoping to get it done in 3 years. Like I said, I loved the Trop. But the demolition, it made me sad reading about the demolition. Here's why. That was the place I first read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by the great Hunter S. Thompson. I had my Fear and Loathing book, and I donned my red Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas t-shirt with the full Ralph Steadman drawing of the cover on the front of my shirt. And I found a tree out in their pool area. I was not playing Swim Up Blackjack. I was reading Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas under a palm tree, wearing my Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas t-shirt, and partaking of the best opening line in literature, at least my version of literature. We were somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert when the drugs began to take hold. Hunter S. Thompson. Gonzo journalist. That's me and the Trop. And it's going away. And now I feel like Robert De Niro's character, Lefty Rosenthal, in Casino at the end. Talk about corporations running this thing. Whereas before, when the mob ran it, there was some personalized stuff going on. Personalized, and just, it was a whole different world. And I loved the whole mobbed up version of Vegas, the idea that mob boss gets shot in New York and he's got the Las Vegas skim numbers in his pocket, and that's the way things worked. And eventually a whole bunch of guys from Kansas City were convicted when the government came down on it, and that you saw in Casino, Kansas City and Cleveland. And anyways, that's it. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, in Las Vegas, and the Trop will go down, will be closed on April 2nd, and eventually they'll demolish it, and you'll see the, you'll see it on television, on the YouTube, whatever kind of streaming thing. If they can make money off that, they will. I will take a break, and when I come back, we'll talk more Bears quarterbacks and puppies. Aaron Lemming of Windy City Gridiron will be here to talk Bears quarterbacks, now and future, and puppies. Come on. It doesn't get much better than that. And next hour, the WB Club will be informed of such things, how your Super Bowl party is going to, best ways to have it, to eat and drink. And Colin Cowherd, the guy who started a Bears ruckus, ended a Bears ruckus when he was on The Score yesterday. We'll bring you that interview with Parkins and Spiegel. That's all set for the hour of rollicking sports news on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
No, the address.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
We'll continue with the Saturday Zeitgeist here. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, but I did not want to miss an opportunity to read this text. 312-644-6767 is the number to get to our text zone and on the phone. In response to the many wives who want nothing to do with, how long are we going to listen to that Saturday Suckage? Here comes the 708. I am a female listener to Saturday Suckage. When my husband walks into the room and hears the show's opening of various people saying that they suck, he sighs and walks out of the room. He doesn't get it. Too bad. Bang, 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 bang. Please continue sucking. Bang, 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 bang. Well, I do it as a public service. I do it because I'm a pleaser, not a teaser. I'm doing it. I'm here for you, 708 female listener. 260 texter, my father, a Harvard law grad, told me that students regularly hid under their desks rather than face the wrath of the real-life Professor Kingsfields. 224, I was in law school when that movie came out. Have you watched John Houseman and the TV version of The Paper Chase? No, I did not. But in talking about campus figures you'd study, got nothing on primetime, 312 texter, got nothing on primetime, but recall walking across the quad to class at Chicago to see Milton Friedman and Saul Bellow in a quite lively conversation. See, there are some all-timers. So I started this several weeks ago, and it angered people, and so we thought, what a good, that's motivation enough to continue this. So now we're up to our 11th greatest riff in rock history. And it's going to start with motorcycles revving because that's where greatness lives. Easy Rider. it. It's Easy Rider. John Cain, Steppenwolf. Born to be Wild.
You know this is the first concert I ever went to? I was like seven.
Wait, Steppenwolf was still playing when you were seven?
They were doing like some like summer tour, but I was seven, so that had to have been 2002.
There was a big fight over who could really be Steppenwolf. It shouldn't have been anything without John Kay. I once interviewed him in his garage in the San Fernando Valley, and he's doing the rock t-shirt thing and sitting, and we're talking, and Born to be Wild, and all I remember is the rock t-shirt, and there's the Born to be Wild guy. And Magic Carpet Ride, which is a great Steppenwolf song. So you saw them. Your parents brought you to the drug-addled Steppenwolf concert?
All I remember from that concert was just being surrounded by weed smoke and cigarettes. And I remember thinking, like, at the time, this sucked. But now I think my dad's the coolest person ever for doing that.
There you go. That's right. Getting ready for real life. So did you get a contact high?
I think that's why.
Getting a contact high?
I think that's why I'm who I am today. Yes.
Look at that. 815 texter right on top of it. This morning I was listening to a rock station out west. They played Smoke on the Water, followed by Running Down a Dream, and made me think of your list. Yep. That's it. Made me think of your show. That's it. Smoke on the Water is number one. Running Down a Dream is number two. And there is the Rolling Stones, Satisfaction. And so that's number 11. We'll be back next week with number 12 if nobody important listened. Robbie, do you know what the Tropicana Casino is?
Not at all.
It's legendary. It's in Las Vegas. Let's start there. Okay? It's at the corner of Tropicana Avenue and the Strip, Las Vegas Boulevard. Trop and the Strip. And that's where it is, south end of the Strip. It's across the street from the MGM Grand, which used to be the Tropicana's golf course, which I played, lo, these many lifetimes ago. To give you an idea of what the Trop is, it could have been the model for Casino. Did you see that movie?
Sadly, no. It's on my list, though. I know.
Why is it our producer, like Trash Panda, was the same way? He'd never seen Goodfellas.
That's crazy. That's one of my. That's a top.
Don't tell me it's crazy and you haven't seen Casino. Don't tell me that's crazy.
That's true, I guess.
Well, the Stardust was mostly the model for it, but the Trop could have been. Because you're talking about a casino where it opens, and 3 weeks later, New York City mob boss, it opens in Las Vegas, New York City mob boss Frank Costello gets shot in the head, but he survives this. Police find in one of his coat pockets the day's take from the Tropicana, the skim from the Tropicana. This is back when the mob ran things. The best government in Vegas. The best government Vegas ever had. So it was all mobbed up, and I love all things mob. The Trop debuted the Folies Bergère in all of their much nakedness. Brought that to Vegas. The Trop gave Siegfried and Roy their start. The Trop invented, brought out, gave you swim-up blackjack. It's exactly what you think. You're in the pool, swim up, they'll do you hands, swim up blackjack. And Evel Knievel made a record-breaking motorcycle jump outside the hotel, soaring 231 feet over a row of limousines. It was known for its Tiffany ceiling. I mean, it's known as the Tiffany of the Strip because of that stained glass ceiling. It was spectacular. I lived in L.A. We drive up there. We'd stay at the Trop regularly. We enjoyed all manner of their buffets. Really? You're going to give me all this lox and cream cheese and bagels to eat? All I want? Yes, sir, we are. That will be the site of the new Oakland A's ballpark, soon to be the Las Vegas A's. They are going to wreck the Tropicana. They're going to blow it up. They're going to drop it down. They're going to raise it, and everybody will watch on TV, and there'll be this massive dust storm. The Tropicana will close April 2nd. They're going to fully demolish it later on, and the A's ballpark will begin construction next year, and they're hoping to get it done in 3 years. Like I said, I loved the Trop. But it made me sad reading about the demolition. Here's why. That was the place I first read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by the great Hunter S. Thompson. I had my Fear and Loathing book, and I donned my red Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas t-shirt with the full Ralph Steadman drawing of the cover on the front of my shirt. And I found a tree out in their pool area. I was not playing Swim Up Blackjack. I was reading. I was reading Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas under a palm tree, wearing my Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas t-shirt, and partaking of the best opening line in literature, at least my version of literature. We were somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert when the drugs began to take hold. Hunter S. Thompson, gonzo journalist. That's me and the trop. And it's going away. And now I feel like Robert De Niro's character, Lefty Rosenthal, in Casino. At the end, talk about corporations running this thing. Whereas before, when the mob ran it, there was some personalized stuff going on. Personally, and just, it was a whole different world. And I loved the whole mobbed up version of Vegas. The idea that mob boss gets shot in New York and he's got the Las Vegas skim numbers in his pocket. And that's the way things worked. And eventually a whole bunch of guys from Kansas City were convicted when the government came down on it. And that you saw in Casino, Kansas City and Cleveland. And anyways, that's it. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and the trop will go down, will be closed on April 2nd. And eventually they'll demolish it. And you'll see it on television, on the YouTube, whatever kind of streaming thing. If they can make money off that, they will. I will take a break, and when I come back, we'll talk more Bears quarterbacks and puppies. Aaron Lemming of Windy City Gridiron will be here to talk Bears quarterbacks, now and future, and puppies. Come on. It doesn't get much better than that. And next hour, the WB Club will be informed of such things, how your Super Bowl party is going to, best ways to have it, to eat and drink. And Colin Cowherd, the guy who started a Bears ruckus, ended a Bears ruckus when he was on The Score yesterday. We'll bring you that interview with Parkins and Spiegel. That's all set for the hour of rollicking sports news on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.